Well, good morning. It's Jeff Wine, host of The Car Show here on Sun Sounds Radio. Folks, once again, we've got an action-packed show for you today. We're going to catch you up on the latest and greatest of the world of the automobile. Well, folks, it's here. It's auction week. Kicked off on Friday night with the concert out at Barrett-Jackson. So we'll talk more about what's going on with all the cool car auctions and events going on this week here in Arizona. We'll catch you up on the roar at the 24 as we're heading into the 24-hour race at Daytona next weekend. Got some news regarding the Chili Bowl. We'll talk about what's going on with Junior Motorsports and Daytona. And we'll catch you up on what's going on with gas prices. And, of course, it wouldn't be the car show without a little car talk. You know what to do. Fasten those seatbelts nice and tight. It's going to be a fast ride on the car show. Well, folks, we made it again. It's time for another great Arizona auction and car week here in the valley. We've got so many great events going off, and I'm going to run through all the major auctions for you. Of course, the big dog Barrett-Jackson out at Westworld of Scottsdale actually opened up yesterday on Saturday. Auction will begin on Sunday, and went out for the Sammy Hagar concert on Friday night, and it was just a blast. More fun than should be legal. And then I'm going to circle back around after we run through the individual auctions and talk about some of the great cars. Some of the celebrity cars are going to be on sale out at Barrett-Jackson. All right, well, the Bonhams car auction is going to be taking place at Weston Kierland. And the auction is on Thursday, January 25th. And the preview is the 23rd through the 25th. And they'll have some great cars. Some highlights. They've got a 1931 Duesenberg Model J that was formerly owned by Her Majesty Queen Maria of Yugoslavia. Also, a 1930 Cadillac V16. R.M. Sotheby's, that's going to be taking place at the Arizona Biltmore. The auction is on Thursday the 25th. The preview is on Wednesday and Thursday, 24th and 25th. Some of the speed vehicles they're going to have, the 2020 McLaren Speedtail, a 2015 Porsche 918 Spyder, also a 1957 356 Outlaw, and a 1973 246 Dino. Worldwide auction, that's going to be located at Sing Meadows, which is down in Tempe at 1490 East Weber Road, and they've got a pretty good selection of very affordable cars and some really super expensive cars. They've got a Ferrari 550, they've got a 2005 Ford GT, a 2004 Lamborghini Murcielago, and then the MAG auction, classic car auction, and that's going to be out at the Wecopaw Resort out by Fort McDowell, and that starts on Thursday the 25th and goes through Saturday the 27th. Would say a little bit more of an affordable opportunity, a good selection of cars under $100,000, muscle cars, Americana cars, Ford pickup trucks, etc. And that will be going on out at Fort McDowell at the casino at Wecopaw. All right, let's talk a little bit more about some of the cool cars that are going to be at Barrett-Jackson. Well, as I mentioned before, I was out at Barrett-Jackson for the Sammy Hagar concert, and Sammy's one of my favorite rock bands. And I saw him for the first time when I was in high school back in 1977. Well, it was really cool because Sammy and the bandmates drove up on stage in a 1962 Ford Thunderbird, which is a car that he is actually going to be selling at the auction this year. Now, this is the car that was owned by his legendary bandmates and former gentleman who formed his first band called Montrose. This was Ronnie Montrose's car. Now, this Thunderbird is a beautiful car powered by a 390 cubic inch engine. Sammy spent 2 years meticulously restoring this car back to its original glory. The 1962 model marked a midpoint for the third generation of the Ford Thunderbird from 61 to 63. The 62 T-Bird showcased a bold styling cue, including its signature bullet nose, rear and dramatic quarter lines, and embody the jet age aesthetic for those upscale buyers. Yeah, it's interesting. Sammy said, we drove that car to Winterland and went on stage to play, and then we drove it home afterwards. It's a street rod. It's made to be driven on the street. So this car will be being sold with no reserve. And that means it will be sold, depending on what the price, and hopefully Semi gets a good amount of money for this very cool black Thunderbird. And like I said, red interior, of course, with Sammy Hagar. It's got to be red because he is the Red Rocker. So from the pages of the Business Journal, it's talking about the Hollywood cars and stars set for the Barrett-Jackson 2025 this year. Well, Barrett-Jackson, the Scottsdale collector car auction, has more than 2,000 cars that are going to be auctioned off this year. And it's an unbelievable collection of sports cars, hypercars, supercars, resto rods, and all the best. Now, it's interesting, we were talking about Sammy Hagar. Last year, the I Can't Drive 55 singer sold his 2015 LaFerrari for a record price of $4.6 million. As I'd mentioned, he's got his 1962 Ford Thunderbird that's going to be coming up. There's also some other cool cars that have a celebrity provenance. A 1970 Plymouth Barracuda that was previously owned by actor Nicolas Cage. A 1951 Mercury Coupe built by Jesse James, the gentleman who had the West Coast Chopper Show. Also a collection of TV and automotive cars, including a Batmobile from the 1960s Batman television series. Also a recreation of the Mystery Machine from Scooby-Doo, the cartoon character. And a recreation of the vehicle that was in the 1968 film Chitty Chitty Bang Bang. Don't see some of these cars coming up very often, and it's interesting that that they're making this year at Barrett-Jackson. Of course, Barrett-Jackson is out at Westworld, and hopefully you'll get a chance to get out there and check out some of these cool cars along with other auctions that are happening around the valley. Well, the Daytona 500 will be coming up before we know it, and the headline reads, JR Motorsports to field a Daytona 500 entry for Jason Allgaier. Well, JR Motorsports will attempt to field and qualify for the running of the Daytona 500 with Justin Allgaier. Now, Allgaier is the reigning Xfinity Championship, which is the, I would say, the second championship in NASCAR. You have Trucks, Xfinity, and Cup being the highest. Well, they drive for Dale Earnhardt Jr. and Kelly Earnhardt Miller, the number 40 Chevrolet. The organization partnered with country music star and 10-time Grammy winner Chris Stapleton for this effort. And Chris Stapleton will sponsor the car with his Traveler Whiskey brand. Well, quote, we've been waiting for the right time for JR Motorsports to enter the Daytona 500, and with Chris Stapleton's unbelievable star power, the planets align for a perfect opportunity to enter this year's Daytona 500. Now, the team will need to earn a spot in the field either through qualifying by speed or on the Thursday night dual qualifying races. JR Motorsports is the sixth open team that it's announced that is going to attempt to make the Daytona 500. Other teams are Beard Motorsports, LiveFast Motorsports, MBM Motorsports, New York Racing, and Trackhouse Racing. Although the program is the first for the JR Motorsports in the Cup Series, Allgaier, their driver, has made 82 starts in the Cup season. He was a full-time driver from 2014 to 2015, driving for Harry Scott Jr. before signing with Earnhardt to drive in the Xfinity Series. He's won 22 races since 2016 and claimed the 2024 Xfinity title. It's an incredible honor to be driving for JR Motorsports in its inaugural entry into the Cup Series. Not only to do it with Dale and Kelly, but also Chris Stapleton and Traveler Whiskey makes us even more special. Entering into the Daytona 500 with this company has been a goal for a long time, and I didn't know when this was going to happen, but it's going to be very special for me. Allgaier has made 7 starts in the Cup Series since 2016. The most recent was in the Coca-Cola 600 last year when he was the backup driver for Kyle Larson, who was attempting to complete the double and run at Indianapolis and the Coke 600. When the race was called because of the rain, he was in the 13th position. If he qualifies for the Daytona 500, it will be Allgaier's third start in the event. He finished 27th in 2014, and in 2015, he finished in 37th. And folks, this is a big deal because JR Motorsports, and this is Dale Earnhardt's son and his daughter, are attempting to kind of stick their toe into the Cup Series to see if they really want to spend the money to jump into the big leagues. They've had such a great success running in the Xfinity Series, and it's certainly a lot more cost-effective and less expensive to run in the Xfinity Series. So we'll see. Excited for JR Motorsports to be heading to Daytona and trying to make the Daytona 500 with the Traveler Whiskey brand and Chris Stapleton. Well, next weekend we kick off in earnest the big racing series start of the season with the Rolex 24 at Daytona. And qualifying for that event is going to be this Thursday, the 23rd, and that is going to be on Peacock, which is a streaming channel, and that's going to start at 11 a.m. here in Arizona. And then the actual 24 hours at Daytona, the Rolex at Daytona, is going to be broadcast across three different networks, NBC, USA, and Peacock. And traditionally, that starts and ends on NBC. And that will start here locally at 10:30 on Saturday morning, the 26th, and end up about at the exact same time on Sunday, the 26th. So very excited to see what happens with the Rolex. And this is also the kind of the big kickoff, because a lot of these same cars will also be running at the 24 hours of Le Mans. Some additional Daytona 500 news, and this was a big shock that it came up over a couple days ago on the 14th. Wallace not approved for the Daytona 500 attempt. Well, Mike Wallace has not been approved by NASCAR to attempt to compete in the Daytona 500 next month with MBM Motorsports due to inactivity in the sport over the last few years. Well, NASCAR has confirmed that with his request to compete and the driver's recent activation and performance are a primary factor for consideration, Wallace has not made a National Series start since 2020 when he ran three road course races for the Xfinity Series, and the last time he ran on an intermediate track or larger was when he ran at Daytona in 2015. Well, Wallace took to Facebook after writing, "To my utter shock and devastation, at 4 o'clock today, the National NASCAR Competition Director Elton Sawyer called to inform me that NASCAR has decided not only to not approve me for the Daytona 500, but at this time, I am not approved to race in Cup, Xfinity, and Truck in 2025, but could go through their process and possibly get approved for 2026. This comes as a total shock, as the president of NASCAR last week in a real phone call told me that I was good and he would see me in Daytona." NASCAR has not only denied Wallace for Cup Series activity, the only request the sanction body had for Wallace, no request had been made talking about his his participation in the Xfinity Series or the Craftsman Truck Series. The 65-year-old Wallace would have had to qualify his way into the Daytona 500 field with the MBM Motorsports group. Despite the setback, the team is still planning on going to Daytona, but now it is in search of a new driver and a sponsor. Well, MBM Motorsports can confirm that NASCAR has deemed Mike Wallace not eligible to compete in the 2025 Daytona 500, despite 11 previous Daytona 500 starts and several super speedway wins due to his recent lack of activity in major professional motorsports. We are devastated for Mike and the Wallace family, and this opportunity did not come to fruition. For MBM, we must regroup at this late stage, the loss of our driver and the loss of our sponsor for the Great American Race. Our team is working swiftly to sign another funded driver for our speed weeks in order to still attempt the 67th running of the Daytona 500. Wallace finished fourth in the 2007 Daytona 500, driving for James Finch. He has five top 10 finishes in his 19 starts at Daytona between the season opening Daytona 500. All in all, Wallace has made 809 National Series starts. So I was very excited for him to have a chance to run this because I'm 65 years old as well. So I'm very, very disappointed and shocked, especially when we talk about the fact that he said he had a person-to-person phone call with the president of NASCAR the week before, said he was all good and he would see me in Daytona. So hopefully we'll get some more information on this story. But it sounds like right now Mike Wallace is not running at Daytona. Well, while we're talking about big motorsports events from the pages of Speed Sport, Marco Andretti to return to the Indy 500. Well, Marco Andretti is set to attempt his 20th running of the Indianapolis 500 this May with Andretti Global, and it will be his After his debut with Andretti this year, it's going to be his only race of this season. Right now, it looks like it is his. He had his best run back in 2020 of recent, where he started on the pole position, and he has had four top three finishes and eight top ten finishes for these guys. So exciting that Marco Andretti is going to be back at the Indianapolis 500 and attempt to finally win this race. And of all the family members, Mario, Marco, and Michael, Mario won the race in 1969, and that's been the only one for this family out of these multiple starts. So hopefully, maybe this year it's time for Andretti to win the 500. Let's talk a little weird and unusual automotive news. Well, the headline reads, Detroit parking lots are charging $1,000 for a parking spot ahead of the NFL playoff game, which was actually last night. Apparently, the most important sporting game in Detroit happens to be the jacked up prices of nearly $1,000. At least they tried. The city officials quickly shut down the operation before a county judge made a reversal call. Well, one team getting a bit of the tension is the Detroit Lions, who, for those who are unfamiliar, have never, ever, ever gone to the Super Bowl. But under their new coach and newfound energy, they're just one win away from the championship game. Well, I'm sorry to say, folks, they actually lost last night. Well, here's the situation. A Twilight Zone level of mixed emotions when any Detroiter or any adjacent sympathizer, hence a scramble for t-shirts, tickets, and parking. But how about this? $1,000 for a parking spot sounds about right, since it's almost $1,000 to go to the game. Makes the matchup between Detroit and Washington one of the third most expensive playoff games since 2010. Now, according to the Detroit News, three parking lots leased by Parkright took advantage of the demand and began charging $999 a spot. Now, to be fair, all of these are located within a block of each other in downtown Detroit, but most importantly, they're less than a five-minute walk away from Ford Field where the Lions play. Now, the city officials were caught off guard, although suspended their operator's license first thing yesterday morning. Our people looked online and saw these three lots that were charging way above the more than the scheduled rate submitted to us, which is somewhere between $10 and $100 per space. And that's according to David Bell, director of the Detroit Building Safety Engineering and Environmental Department. But the shutdown was short-lived because a county judge ordered them to reopen. Why? Because people needed the parking spaces, not empty parking lots. As of yesterday, the three reopened the lots and were charging $140 to $150, which is still higher than the agreed-upon rate and prices at similar lots. A city attorney did file a complaint against the lots, citing similar markups during the last year's home game playoffs. However, Parkright attorney claimed the prices were an accident. According to Michael Vogt, the inflated rates showed on Hero Spot, and initially placeholders are evidently listed to the public. To be fair, no one actually reserved one of the $999 spots. Parkright said it made a mistake, and they've corrected that, according to Wayne County Circuit Judge David Allen. At this point, let's get those lots open for the folks who want to go to the event. As of now, the city officials are satisfied, but have warned Parkright and others about this. While the judge ruled against the closures that we requested, our proactive efforts have let all parking lot owners know that we're watching, according to Bell in a statement. It's an important reminder that all city operations follow the rules, and parking lot users know that the city is out there working to protect them. Now the city knows the taste of victory, but you can't blame them for wanting more. According to the author, personally, I've always had a soft spot for Detroit, but today, even though my head says otherwise, I think it's going to be Washington in a victory. And you know what? He was right. Washington did go on to win the game last night, much to the chagrin of all my Detroit fans, which were really hoping that this was going to be that Detroit was finally going to get to the Super Bowl. Well, as we start 2025, there were some great racing car drivers that we lost in 2024. One of the biggest was Bobby Allison. Lived from 1937 to 2024, was one of NASCAR's all-time greats. Three Daytona 500 wins. He amassed 85 career wins in stock cars. Although his 85th was at Bowman Gray Stadium in 1971, that wasn't officially recognized until last year. He also demonstrated his versatility in appearing in sports cars and Indy cars. Well, Wally Dahlenbach Sr., 1936 to 2024, overcame second-tier equipment and fields that sometimes included American open-wheel greats to carve out a distinguished open-wheel career in the 60s and 70s. With a victory in the 1973 California 500 at Ontario with Patrick Racing and led 100 laps in the 1975 Indy 500. He made a bigger mark when he was the chief steward and competition director for CART, which was the other IndyCar series. Wilson Fittipaldi, who was brother to Emerson Fittipaldi and found F1's only Formula One team and constructor. He was in the car in the 70s. And he had 38 Formula One starts with no victories. Well, Eddie Gossage, 1958 to 2024, old school promoter and longtime known as the colorful operator of the Texas Motor Speedway, a prodigy of Charlotte Motor Speedway's promoter Humpy Wheeler. Gossage led Texas Motorsports from its construction from 1995 through his retirement in 2022. Well, Rufus Parnelli Jones, 1933 to 1924, one of the fastest, most versatile drivers in American racing history, winner of the 1963 Indy 500, two-time winner of the Baja 1000 in 1971 and 1972, also multi-race winners in NASCAR, Sprint Car, Midgets, and Trans Am, also national champion in Trans Am in 1970, achieved immense success as a team owner, winning Indianapolis twice with Al Unser, along with three national USAC championships. Also founded a team in Formula One between 1974 and 1975. Fred Lorenzen, nicknamed the Golden Boy, Fred Lorenzen, 1934 to 1924, one of NASCAR's most prominent drivers during the rise of NASCAR in the 60s. Despite never having run a full season, as a member of the Holland Moody Ford team, he became the first driver to win more than $100,000 in a single season. That was in 1963. And counted wins at Daytona, the Daytona 500 in 1965, the Coca-Cola 600, and 26 wins at stock cars top level. And he is a member of the NASCAR Hall of Fame. Well, this week, the midgets have been running out in Oklahoma, and the headline reads, Kyle Larson becomes the three-time Chili Bowl champion. Well, Kyle Larson dedicated himself to the Chili Bowl this year, and in fact saw the fruits of his labor starting on the pole on Saturday night's A-Main and controlled the entire show through crashes and other issues to take away his third victory. With this win, Larson joins a small club with three wins or more, Sammy Swindell, Kevin Swindell, and former NASCAR great, and Cup driver Christopher Bell have all done it before. After losing the Race of Champions on Monday night, he went on to win the race this weekend. And it's interesting, or on Saturday night, because he was driving for his own team for the first time instead of driving for another racing team. And also Joe Gibbs Racing, Christopher Bell, and Hendrick Development driver Corey Day also joined him in the race. Bell finished in 10th and Corey Day finished in 11th. So Kyle Larson goes on, and he is definitely one of the best drivers out there, NASCAR champion, and looking to drive the double again this year, running running the Coca-Cola 600 and the Indianapolis 500 all in the same day. We'll start gas prices with our friends at AAA. Now, gas is ticking up a little bit right now. The national average is $3.12. Right now, we are just a tick above that average at $3.13. New Mexico, $2.87. Colorado, $2.89. Utah, $2.99. And California, $4.42 a gallon. All right, let's see what's going on here locally with our gas prices in Arizona. Well, right now, the least expensive gas in the state is in Goodyear on Australia Parkway at the 7-Eleven, $2.35. The TA Travel Center in Eloy at $2.39. The Love's Travel Stop in Eloy at $2.49. And the Fast Trip in Casa Grande at $2.57. All right, let's see what's going on here in Metro Phoenix with our gas prices. Let's talk about cheap gas in Phoenix right now. $2.67 at the Costco on 33rd Avenue, the Arco station on Grand Avenue at 100303 at $2.67, the Arco station on 43rd Avenue at $2.73, and the Walmart in Scottsdale on Northside at $2.75 a gallon. Well, folks, we've come to that time of the show. It's time for a little car talk. Dear Car Talk, well, ever since NASCAR great Smokey Unick recommended in the 70s, I've been using synthetic motor oil in my car. Now something comes along called a synthetic blend, but no one can tell me the ratio of synthetic oil to the regular oil in the synthetic blend. Can you? And that's from Ron. Nope. Well, the oil companies don't make that information available to us, Ron, and perhaps it's not required to disclose it because it comes under the guise of trade secrets, or maybe it just comes under the guise of marketing BS. But here's my guess. Most engines these days call for synthetic oil. It is clearly superior to the dinosaur-based stuff that we've been using certainly close to after the wheel was invented. Synthetic lubricates better, it lasts about twice as long, and most companies that manufacture, and more importantly, have warranties on engines, insist that you use it. Now, it's a bit more expensive than conventional oil, so in order to sell something at a lower price point for the term of cheapskates, well, they came up with the concept of a synthetic blend, which is a mixture of the dinosaur oil and the synthetic oil. Now, is it any better for your engine than pure conventional oil? I have no idea. If it is, it probably depends on how much synthetic is in the blend. And since they won't tell us what that amount is, I think an educated consumer is wise to assume it's a very small amount. I mean, theoretically, you could put a teaspoon of synthetic oil in a quart of conventional dinosaur oil and call it a blend, right? Now, I have no idea if it's that little. But the fact that they keep that information secret and won't tell us suggests that they're not really proud of the percentage of the synthetic oil in their blends. So I'd absolutely recommend sticking with the full synthetic, Ron. I mean, you wouldn't buy partially pasteurized milk or partially galvanized steel. So I wouldn't buy slightly synthetic blended oil. Synthetic is a little more expensive, but in comparison to the cost of a major repair to your engine, it's frankly, it's dirt cheap, really. Yeah, I would agree with that, folks. The blended stuff, if you're gonna stick with conventional oil because you think your old car wants it, that's fine. But in reality, synthetic oil is absolutely the way to go. I run that in my cars, and I wouldn't do without it. Well, that's all the time we have for the car show today, folks. My name's Jeff Wine. We'll meet you back again on the radio next Sunday, and you're listening to Sun Sounds Radio of Arizona.